C1M. Number 11A.
Now we come to the last and seventh subject, and here we will ask ourselves first again, what does Mrs. Eddy say to what we should wed ourselves? And here we get quite different qualities than we had before. Let me recapitulate what we had before. First, it was in the first subject, wedding ourselves to a law-abiding attitude, to a respect for law and moral and civil regulations. Second, it was wedding ourselves to affections which are pure and tender and loving. Third, it was wedding ourselves to selflessness, to a broad-mindedness where we see that there is only one interest and not many interests, where there is unity of spirit and unity of interest. Fourth, it was wedding ourselves to fundamental facts and not to personal sense. And fifth, it was wedding ourselves to an ever refined and exalted qualities which would rule. And then in the sixth, it was wedding ourselves to a higher, to an understanding of man's higher nature, to an understanding of that nature of man which is derived from God. And now in the seventh, we get a sense that we should wed ourselves to a spiritual adherence to God. Now we get all those qualities which lifts us out of the human and binds us to the spiritual and divine. It is here where she demands a more spiritual adherence. See, now we touch the spiritual. Here is the last step of the bridge which leads us to the spiritual and therefore to the fourth chapter on spiritualism. And so we will witness here that final resurrection which will bring us to where we are no more going to marry nor given in marriage, but where we are like the angels in heaven. In other words, here she speaks about spiritual ascendancy. See, in the fifth subject, it was only the ascendancy of good over evil, the ascendancy of the moral over the animal. But here it is more than that. It is asking us to reach out for the spiritual, so that the spiritual has ascendancy. It is here that she asks for spiritual consciousness. She has never done that in the chapter. For spiritual consciousness. It is here that she asks to be educated spiritually. And so you have many, many, it is spiritually to understand that there is but one creator. There are many others which of these terms and phrases which are in here, which you may make notes in your private study, but you will feel at once that the seventh subject appeals to a very much different attitude or qualities than the sixth subject before, and that it appeals always in the direction towards adhering the spiritual, and therefore to see that the human is insufficient. Here we will get all that which makes us realize that only the spiritual can satisfy finally and eternally and ultimately. Well, these are the qualities. Now, let us ask ourselves, what is depicted here as a scriptural note? That is, what does this spiritual adherence accomplish? It is naturally, again, that scriptural note of principle, life, and truth. Of principle, which says what God has joined together. And this principle sense here is introduced again in a very different sense, namely as the unity with God. See, principle as the unity that has God joined together, and men shall not put asunder. Now, you remember how she varied. She varied this sense of principle, life, truth in every tone. You see, in the first subject, that unity was that she proposed a union with a covenant, a legal union, to keep the legal union. In spirit, it was another union that she advocated. It was the union of qualities so that they can blend. The masculine mind and the feminine mind unite. In the third, that principle, that union had another touch. It was the union in interest. And in the fourth, it was showing that this the union in science is indestructible. So it showed the destructibility of a scientific union. Then in life, showed that union again in a very different way, namely that it showed that there exists a union between cause and effect, that the effect is exactly like the cause. And in the sixth subject, that union was shown as the union of all the qualities in one person uniting all the qualities. And now in love you get that union as the unity of man to God. Can you see how, I mean, even if it sounds academical or intellectual, it doesn't matter. But it gives us an impression of the exactness of that revelation which we have in the textbook, which is beyond words. You see, she varies every tone according to the subject in which she uses it. So here it is, that which God has joined together, let no man put asunder. She gives the highest sense of unity, namely the unity of man with God, the coexistence of man with God. It speaks about man coexistent with God, about the unbroken links of eternal harmonious being where there is no more parting. So, we can see what she wants to say, that as we wed ourselves to a more spiritual adherence, as we wed ourselves in the measure as we wed ourselves more to the spiritual, we unite more and more with God. And that has a resurrecting effect in the resurrection, they shall neither marry. That has a resurrecting effect, and here it is shown, life is shown always as that rising higher spiritually. Whereas before it was mostly rising higher in the human, an improvement in the human, therefore a better sense of humanhood. That was the rising. Here is the final rising. After the spiritual one can't rise higher. So here she indicates always to rise higher into the spiritual and brings out truth as the man of God's creating, showing that as we rise higher in that unity with God, we will really find that man which is the man of God's creating. speaks all about man delivered from sin, disease, and death. She speaks about man coexistent with God, man evolved from spirit. Speaks about the real ideal man appears in proportion as the false material man appears. About man, deathless, perfect, eternal. Before she hasn't spoken about in that way about man. So you can feel, and as you ponder them in your quiet hours, it will become quite tangible to you. But at the present moment, you may feel from what I indicate that we are approaching now with the seventh subject the ultimate of marriage, namely God, man's unity with God. So that really that whole chapter on marriage finds in its climax where there will be no more concession to human marriage or to human relationship, where human relationship through the first five or six subjects have helped us to rise step by step in a way of improvement, the human footsteps leading to perfection, in order that they help us finally to the realization that only one thing is important and real and eternal and perfect, that's man's marriage with God. And so we can put all these factors together, the seventh subject together with the scriptural note, by saying that by adhering more and more to the spiritual, we are raised to an understanding of man's unity with God. And the way this is done, the way how little by little this is accomplished, is then depicted through the seven subtones. But before we take these seven subtones, I want to talk a little bit around that seven subject, just to give a feel for what we will considering afterwards. Perhaps I can put it like this. We know that the spiritual is the only factual. And so everything in that development which is shown in marriage must somehow drive towards that spiritual. Therefore, it must show us a way out, an education out of the human into the spiritual. And that this is meant to be so, we have seen time and time again by those statements showing that marriage is a temporal thing. In this subject, she makes statements like this, that she says that matrimony was once considered a fixed fact, indicating that really matrimony is not a fact. It was once considered a fixed fact. Later she speaks about facts, but she speaks about man's coexistence with God to be a fact. So you will see that in this last subject, she begins to shake at the notion of marriage as something to be factual or eternal or to be the ultimate or to be a goal. She says that matrimony is in an unsettled, transitional stage, that it has at present a slippery footing, you see, it's all vague, it's not a fact really, that it leans so often on a material staff, a broken reed which pierces the heart. She even says of conjugal felicity that it is fleeting. Even of conjugal felicity that it is fleeting, you see, it's not a fact. And so that we ought to be weary of the fleeting and false. And this ought to be weary, this feeling of the insufficiency of a human proposition is very predominant in this last subject, because she shows really that marriage as such is insufficient to meet the highest demands, because it is not of God. Marriage is of people, and is of human wish and will, and maybe good wish, maybe a bit other things, but it is not of God, it is of mortals. And therefore the aim of true marriage will be the marriage feast as shown in the Apocalypse, as a spiritual unity with God. And so no matter if we are happy or a bit unhappy in our marriage or relationship, this consoling last subject always comes in and says, yes, if you're happy or unhappy, that isn't the question. The question is, will you see that it isn't the aim nor the goal nor the ultimate, that it must yield to a higher sense of unity or of marriage. In other words, what is considered in ordinary language as marriage as a human fact, that matrimony was once considered a fixed fact, we must not try to eternalize that. What she shows in this seventh subject is that this marriage is right as a concession, and it can do a wonderful job, but that we must hold in view that it is transitional and temporary, and that in every step of the way we should always hold in view that finally we have to work towards a higher sense of marriage. So love always comes because love wants us to achieve the ultimate. You see, that's the nature of love, that love wants us to achieve the ultimate good, and love never rests until she achieves the ultimate good. And because love is of that nature, love must shake at the slippery foundation of everything which is human. And so we get here a very great sense that love is shaking the foundation of a human proposition, and shaking it until that sense of love within us awakes, which reaches out for the spiritual ultimate. So we will get that shaking and shaking in every subtone. And in that shaking is always behind it is that angel entertained unawares, which wants us to come to her bosom, to see that we let go step by step of the human, be it conjugal felicity or conjugal infelicity, that it wants us to let it go and make us ready to accept the ultimate fact of being, namely the unity of principle and idea. So, in this last subject, love again is seen as a very forcible nature, forcing us to give up human unity as the aim of life. As the aim of life, not as its transitional stage. It forces us to attain spiritual unity. It is love that forces us to demand for this spiritual unity, that something in us awakes and demands that spiritual unity in proportion as we find out that human unity is insufficient. It's always about the insufficiency of the human as such, which is shown here. You see, up to the fifth subject really was shown how the human can give us some happiness and joy, and how it is necessary and nice and helpful and so on, as a transitionary stage. But then, in the sixth and seventh subject, she shows that we cannot rest and stay and hold with the first five subjects, that truth and love will force us to give up a loving and a longing and desire for just a human happiness as the aim and all of everything, and that it forces us by shaking the human situation so that we demand for a higher spiritual adherence. So it is really shown that the insufficiency of the human, that it lies embedded, so to say, in the nature of the human, that the human cannot be sufficient and cannot be satisfying to the nth degree, that it lies in that, that this enforces us to reach out for the divine. You remember, even at the end of Atonement and Eucharist, in the tone of love, very much towards the end, this was already indicated in the tone of love. Mrs. Eddy wrote there, "The world could not interpret aright the discomfort which Jesus inspired and the spiritual blessing which might flow from such a discomfort." She already showed there, because love and force, we have seen that love enforces reformation. And through that operation, love brings to the world a discomfort. The world could not interpret aright the discomfort which Jesus inspired, and could not see the spiritual blessing which grows out of such a discomfort. But now here in marriage, through the whole seventh subject, she depicts now how the world feels this discomfort, and she interprets now to the world why the world or we experience this discomfort, and shows and interprets now through seven subtones the blessing which flows out of such a discomfort. So here we get again the answer to what has been proposed in Atonement and Eucharist. In Atonement and Eucharist, it was not explained how love was working out this problem. It was just stated that it will be so, because love, as the Christ will bring to the world, to the counterfeit of love, will bring a discomfort. But in marriage now, we find the interpretation of it and the step-by-step explanation of why we feel that discomfort and the blessing which comes out of that discomfort. So what we will see here is that the very fact of love's nature, that there is in reality a fact called love, which we symbolize by love, has forced the human to be self-seen as insufficient. That's what we will see through every paragraph. That love's nature is such that it forces the human to see that it is insufficient. And the moment, naturally, the human sees the insufficiency of the human, then it is also willing and ready to reach out for the spiritual, and so forces that remnant in us, that little seed in us, that remnant in us, to reach out for the true sense of marriage, union with God. So, when we read that last section of the seventh subject, which is full of the shaking, and therefore for many people not so agreeable, well, regarding and considering it properly, naturally, we see that it is a progressive state which is shown. That this shaking of the human is a very progressive state. And so it shows that if in our lives such a situation comes about, that we are sober and balanced and a bit rational about it, but not emotional about it, and just investigate and ask ourselves, what is working behind the scene? Because it can be that we just see that love is forcing us to make a forward step, and that what the human sense seems to be, for what it seems to be disagreeable, is really the highest blessing taking place. Well, anyway, she shows here the fake of the human as such, how it becomes apparent. And so with these introductory remarks, let us consider the tone of love in its seven subtones. You may ask, why has it seven subtones if it is laid out in the days of creation, and the days of creation have only two tones? Well, the difference really is none, because in love, we have, in the days of creation, in the seventh day, we have the subtones love as truth and love as love, which just means that love as truth says love as love, I include the whole ideal of truth. And truth is always the summary, the recapitulation of the whole seven. So it's only in the days of creation, it's a shorthand description of the seventh day. Here it is a bit in a larger way. So that truth which includes the seven is now also explained in the seven. So that doesn't disprove anything. Now, here she begins with the tone of mind. And I would have summarized it like this by saying that beholding the insufficiency of the human mind reaches out for a higher affection. See, what she says here is that the broadcast powers of evil, that they struggle against the advancing spiritual era. See, we get the spiritual. All through this last tone, the term spirit and spiritual is very predominant, because we enter now out of the human into the spiritual. And she says, well, we can see that the broadcast powers of evil try to struggle against this natural development through the first seven periods. These broadcast powers of evil, which show themselves in the materialism and centralism of the age, beholding and realizing, it's beholding the world's lack of Christianity and the powerlessness of vows to make home happy. Well, what has that as its effect?